So I'm going to start today by reading a koan from the Hekigan Roku. And this is koan number 2. And the title of this koan is Joshu's The Highest Way Is Not Difficult. It goes like this. Joshu, teaching the assembly, said, "The highest way is not difficult. Just avoid picking and choosing. With but a single word there may arise picking and choosing, or there may be clarity. This old monk does not abide within clarity." Do you appreciate the meaning of this or not? Then a monk asked, "If you do not abide in that clarity, what do you appreciate?" Joshu said, "I don't know that either." The monk said, "Since you don't know, how can you say that you don't abide in clarity?" Joshu said, "It is enough to ask about the matter. Now make your bows and retire." So Joshu here is quoting from the Xinjing Ming. And this apparently, this line that he quotes is one of his favorites. And it also appears in another 3, maybe 4 or 5, I don't know the exact count, other koan in the Hekigan Roku. There's several other places, maybe we'll look at those as well when we talk about this one. But this thing from the Xinjing Ming, written by the third Zen patriarch, Sengsan, this line, and it's translated in various ways. This is the way it's translated here. "The highest way is not difficult, just avoid picking and choosing." Then he goes on and he said, "But with a single word, there may arise picking and choosing." What about that? Then he said, "Or there may be clarity." And then he makes this statement, "This old monk does not abide within clarity." And he asks everybody in the room, "Do you understand what I'm saying by this? That I don't abide in clarity?" And then a monk, a very brave monk, asked, "If you don't abide in clarity, what do you appreciate? Isn't that what this practice is all about? Isn't it about clarity?" And this is the critical thing. Joshu said, "I don't know that either." Now there is a saying in Zen that our practice is on two sides of a single coin, you could say. One side is holding fast and the other side is letting go. Now what I've been emphasizing in Sesshin, in the Teisho, the encouragement talks at the end of the day, and many of the Dokusan that we've had together, is this holding fast side. This holding fast. It's this penetrating, something that I refer to as tsening, to tsen, which is a Chan word meaning to look into, to penetrate into. You shrink things down to the tiniest point, and then you enter that point, enter it. It's like a flashlight shining in on itself. It's a very critical part of our practice, this holding fast. This brings about a kind of clarity. all the confusion in the world, all the different things happening, the sensory inputs, the thoughts, even the sense of yourself in this black hole disappear. This black hole has such intense gravity, even light can't escape it. This is a critical part of our practice. It's important to learn this as a Zen student. I'll read to you again this quote, which I've mentioned before. And this is one of the, this is the very first of the five ranks of Tozan. Now, Tozan Ryokai was a Zen master who wrote a long poem. It was kind of a poem like the Shenjingming. And in it were five, you could call them steps or stages. They're listed one through five, so in a sense they're steps along the path of Zen training. But as you really go through this training, you begin to realize that each one of them is a dimension that you can look at of one thing. And they're not truly steps. Matter of fact, you must continually look at these different sides, refresh them, refresh them, refresh them. When I read the poem on this first rank. So Tozan says here, the apparent within the real. In the third watch of the night before the moon appears, no wonder when we meet there is no recognition. This is when you sin so intensely. You look into the very source of the knower. You look into the very being of the beer. So close, so tiny, so intently that everything else seems to disappear in this deep questioning. It's very, very wonderful, very clarifying, very empowering. This is the source from which Buddhas and Bodhisattvas come. And we all know how to do this kind of practice. But there's another two lines to this poem that I hadn't yet read. So the last two lines of this poem on the first rank goes like this. Still cherished in my heart is the beauty of earlier days. This is the difficulty with solely doing this kind of practice. It's a very critical practice, but it's imbalanced. One becomes attached to this quietude. One becomes attached to this clarity. And one wants to go back to it and the world as it presents, which includes the events in the world, and the events within, distraction, shame, despair, anxiety, distraction, all these things, they get in the way of this. And you want to push them away and go back to this clarity. Still cherished in my heart is the beauty of earlier days. It's being caught, it's being trapped. It's not free. Now, when I began my practice, and I don't know if this was the cause or the effect or it's chicken and egg, but I started my practice with a very hard style. It was this style, this intensity, this looking deep within, slashing down any distraction, and at the same time having in my mind an image of some kind of perfect Zen student, some state of perfection, some state of Kensho, that if I didn't get, I'd failed. And this became my practice style for 30 years. Now, I learned this from some teachers, but I perhaps learned it and adopted it and ran with it and did it intensely, and I have no regret for having gone in this direction, but it's because that was the way I was made. There was something in me that I thought had to be fixed, something that had to be gotten rid of. So I resonated with this approach. Now, it wasn't until I met a particular teacher that it began to loosen up, and this holding fast also became, turned into, evolved into letting go. And that teacher was Roshi Richard Clark. Now, something about Roshi Richard Clark we all know very well. There was a softness, a gentleness, a kindness, an all-embracingness. I've never quite hugged anyone the way I hugged Roshi. It's so natural that he would teach in a manner that would not just fall on this one side, this holding fast side. Let me read something to you. This is the introduction to Roshi's translation of the Shinjin Ming. I'm not going to read the whole introduction, I'll read the first part of it. These are the words of Roshi. And he's talking about Sengtan, the author of the Shinjin Ming, which was quoted by Joshu in this koan that I read. So he writes here, "What are we to say of a person's life, of this man's life and its relevance to us? Tsengsan, called Sosan by the Japanese. We know that he lived and that he died, and that certain tales are told of him, and certain words attributed to him. His death is said to have occurred in the year 606 of our counting time. Neither his birth date nor his birthplace is recorded. Who, after all, was to know? Only a few biographical fragments about him exist. He apparently wandered as a mendicant, and during a persecution of Buddhists lived anonymously in the mountains. He is said to have been notably kind and gentle, and to have come to the dropping away of all bondage and illusion with the help of Weka, his teacher." Remember, Weka was the student of Bodhidharma. "Thus realizing in his own life the full light of the awakened mind, which is the birthright available to all human beings, he expressed his realization by affirming that what Buddhists and others had called defilements, in quotations, are the same as Buddha nature." I'm going to read that sentence again, words of Roshi. "Sengsan expressed his realization by affirming that what Buddhists and others had called defilements are the same as Buddha nature. That is, there is only one undefilable reality. Thensan received transmission from Weka and became thereby what we call the third Chinese patriarch of Zen. He continued a poor wandering monk, eventually transmitting this Zen essence to Daoshin, who became his successor in the teaching lineage. The last two words of this paragraph are, nothing special. Nothing special. So Zengsan, you go to the original text, and this is the Roshi's translation. The great way is not difficult for those not attached to preferences. When neither love nor hate arises, all is clear and undisguised. Separate by the smallest amount, however, and you are as far from it as heaven is from earth. If you wish to know the truth, then hold to no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. And I'll read this one last paragraph. I won't go through the entire text. When the fundamental nature of things is not recognized, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. The way, with a capital W, is perfect, as vast space is perfect, where nothing is lacking and nothing is in excess. So this matter of avoiding picking and choosing, not being attached to preferences, what does this mean? Now, we do have preferences. I prefer, when I'm eating breakfast, to eat a fresh egg, not a rotten egg. I prefer having a good night's sleep rather than a rotten night's sleep. This isn't what we're talking about. I'm not talking about the preferences of everyday life. They're part of it, but it's not really what this is going into. It's about our deep practice. Remember now, Zengsan said the great way. We're talking about this great way of Zen, this great way of practicing to come into accord with our true nature. He said it's not difficult for those not attached to preferences. The minute something arises in your mind that you're trying to get rid of, fight against, struggle against, heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. Why? Because you've then created a self standing apart, and that's it. So Joshua here, he quoted the same line. The highest way is not difficult, just avoid picking and choosing. I want this mind state. I don't want that mind state. I want to be this kind of Zen student, not that kind of Zen student. I want to be clear, incisive, focused. I don't want these thoughts. I want to sit ramrod straight like a mountain. I don't want this pain and instability. And the minute those thoughts arise and the preferences arise, there's a self there checking, standing apart. There's something outside that I'm either trying to hold on to or push away, and there's an apparent entity inside struggling. This is difficult practice. This is not the easy practice of the Great Way. Now, this is Joshu's subtlety and his kindness, gentleness, this letting go. He said, with a single word, one thought arises in my mind, one notion, one insight. And there may be picking and choosing. There it is. I'm sitting and now I'm not wanting this, or I'm rejecting this, stressing over this, distracted, fighting to get back, trying to send my koan, but I can't. His thoughts are getting in the way. With a single word. That word might be, I'm a failure. There may arise picking and choosing. Or there may be clarity. Now this is very, very critical. This is the gentle, open-hearted, open arms of Joshu. This old monk does not abide within clarity. He doesn't hold on to clarity. If clarity comes, just clarity. If picking and choosing comes, just picking and choosing. Just. Your true nature does not disappear when picking and choosing arise. Your true nature does not disappear when identification with a small, struggling self arises. This is the key. This is the way. This is the open-hearted, letting go approach to waking up. Now, do you understand this? This is what he asks his students. Do you appreciate the meaning of this or not? Do you appreciate it or not? If you appreciate it, you're still your true nature. If you don't appreciate it, you're still your true nature. You can't escape it. It's inescapable. This is the inescapable one truth. Inescapable, no matter what. Whether pain comes, distraction comes, identification comes, clarity comes. How do I know this? How do I get there? How do I embrace this? That was really the question of this monk. How do I embrace this? But he asked it this way. If you don't abide in that clarity, what do you appreciate? He's really saying, if I don't hold on to clarity, how can I get it? And Joshu said, I don't know that either. No knowing. No knowing. This 27-year-old Japanese Zen student of Harada Roshi, who was our spiritual great-great-grandfather, great-great-great-grandfather, came to a deep enlightenment. And in one of the several letters that she wrote to Harada Roshi, because they lived at a distance and she couldn't travel because she was on her sickbed, dying of TB. In one of the letters, which were all saved, by the way, and are now kept in a museum somewhere, they're very, very highly revered in Zen circles. So one of these letters she wrote to Harada Roshi, what a relief to discover that just as I am perfect. Just as I am. What does perfect mean? It means no picking or choosing. Just as I am. Just as I am. Exactly, right now. Precisely as I am. I'm not abiding in clarity. I'm not abiding in ignorance. I'm simply not knowing that either. Not knowing. Plunged. I am this as it unfolds. In the only way it could unfold. Because everything is karmically based. Everything that you can see, hear, smell, touch, taste, or think about came from something just before and just before and just before. It couldn't have been any different right now. So to pick and choose is to mistake that, to not see that. Oh, you didn't see it. You missed it. You weren't clear about it. You flunked. Did you know it's all, it has to be exactly this way and you're struggling? Remember what Joshu says. There may arise picking and choosing. There may arise this forgetting. There may arise this humanity. I just wish it was this way. In our practice, we see that and we don't know that either. We don't know that. It just arises. It's not happening to an entity standing apart. Yesterday I read a koan from the Hekigan Roku that ended with this comment by Nansen. He was talking to the Taifu Riku Ko. Riku Ko was quoting the Dharma Master Zhou, this famous Dharma Master from several hundred years before, who had written, "Heaven and earth and I have one and the same source. The 10,000 things and I have one and the same body." Is that not extraordinary? Pointing to a flower in the garden, Nansen said to the Taifu, "When men of today look at this flower, it seems to them like a dream." Remember the dream. Not one iota of the dream is apart from the dreamer. Joshu said, "I don't know that either. I don't know that." So this not knowing. Secho, who was the compiler of the Hekigan Roku. Incidentally, he compiled and wrote his poems and verses while looking out through a window at these beautiful blue cliffs. And he named the book The Blue Cliff Record. So he wrote this commentary on Nansen's remark that when men of today look at this flower, it seems to them like a dream. He wrote, "Hearing, seeing, understanding, knowing, each of these is not separate. For this one, mountains and rivers do not appear in the mirror. Each of these, hearing, seeing, understanding, knowing. Hearing is not separate from sound. Seeing is not separate from sight. Knowing is not separate from any insight, any thought. When you come to this, what Joshu says, describes as, I don't know that either. I don't know that. For you, mountains and rivers, and let's expand this, pain in the knees, sadness, distraction, frustration, difficulty, joy, tears, insights, do not appear in the mirror. They don't appear in the mirror. The mirror is gone. When there's no mirror, there's no picking or choosing. Things are what they are. There's no reflecting action of your awareness. You are mountains and rivers. You are pain in the knee. You are picking and choosing. This is the not difficult path. The difficult path is the one that struggles to hold on to a particular mode of practice. The not difficult path is called the great way. It opens its arms wide and embraces everything exactly as it comes. Norma beautifully talked about this in the first teisho of this session. Precisely this. For this one, mountains and rivers do not appear in the mirror. I don't understand that. I don't get what that means. That is it. Don't judge that. Don't fight that. Don't pick something else. Don't push that away. Everything as it comes. This is called, there's a word for this. The word for this is called mindfulness, or I prefer the word zazen. That's what zazen is. Zazen is opening your arms wide and letting, allowing. This is the letting go, the gentle, the kind approach to your practice. Now we need both. I wouldn't emphasize one necessarily over the other, but if you had to pick and choose one, I would emphasize this letting go side. Now, what else does Joshu say about this line? I think it's useful to look further. So this is koan number 57 in the Hekigan Roku. And this is titled, Joshu's Throughout Heaven and Earth, I alone am the honored one. So a monk said to Joshu, the ultimate way is not difficult, just avoid picking and choosing. What is not picking and not choosing? It's a very valid question. What do you mean, no, avoid picking and choosing? Joshu said, throughout heaven and earth, I alone am the honored one. The monk said, this is still picking and choosing. Joshu said, you fool! Where is the picking and choosing? The monk was speechless. Throughout heaven and earth, I alone am the honored one. Alone, alone. I come disguised as the things I'm picking and choosing. I alone come as pain in the knees, distraction, sadness, joy, laughter, clarity, confusion. I alone come throughout heaven and earth. Throughout, there's one atom, one tiny point, one location anywhere in this fabric of space-time where I alone am not the honored one, the one that everyone has been looking for. Throughout heaven and earth, I alone am the honored one. Remember, mountains and rivers, for this one, do not appear in the mirror. You have to throw your arms open wide to see it this way. Maybe we'll look at one more. This is a wonderful. So this is koan number 58. And this is Joshu's not explaining. And it goes like this. A monk said to Joshu, you so often quote the words, the ultimate way is not difficult, just avoid picking and choosing. Isn't that your point of attachment? Gotcha. Joshu said, a monk asked me that same question once 5 years ago. And 5 years later, I still haven't found any justification for it. How kind, how gentle, how natural. No artifice, no trying to be something you're not, no resisting. Just the way it is. Monk asked me that. Isn't this not picking and choosing, isn't that attachment? 5 years later, I still can't find any justification for that viewpoint. And there's one last one that I'll read to you. And this is koan number 59. This is Joshu's why not quote it fully? The monk said to Joshu, the ultimate way is not difficult, just avoid picking and choosing. If you say a word, that is picking and choosing, so how do you go about helping people? Joshu said, why don't you quote this saying in full? The monk said, I have only this much in mind. Joshu said, it is just this. The ultimate way is not difficult. Just avoid picking and choosing. He quoted it in full. There's nothing outside that. Nothing outside yourself. Nothing outside exactly the way you unfold in each moment. There's no other way to help people. There's no other way to help yourself. You are just as you come. Like Yaiko Iwasaki said, just as I am the perfect manifestation of exactly what could not have been otherwise. You, exactly as you come, are perfect, meaning incomparable. There's nothing else to compare it to. It is just as it is. Now, when you enter this fully, that is really doing zazen. So hold fast to that. Well, then there.